Are live. We are on
Talk
the air.
Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. This is Portal to Ascension live. I am your host, Leonard O'Neill. We have a conference coming up in Irvine, California in October. I don't know if you guys know about this, and we're talking to these people about this and telling you guys about this. In October, on the 5th, 6th, and 7th of 2018, this year in Irvine, California, okay, at the Atrium Hotel, there's going to be fabulous amounts of speakers. If you guys tuned in yesterday, you saw that I had one of the speakers on there who was an ex-FBI agent who was the real Fox Mulder, who they based the TV show X-Files on. Today, I have another guest on here that's going to be at that same three-day event that you can't miss. You guys need to get your tickets now to that. You can go to ascensionconference.com and take a look at getting your tickets for this, and go to Atrium Hotel and make sure you get a room there so that you have somewhere to stay, because you're not going to want to miss all 3 days of this event that's coming up. We have a lot of people. We have people lined up like Grant Hancock. We got Grant Cameron. We got Jimmy Church, John D'Souza, who I had on the show yesterday, and this gentleman who I have on the show today, Ray Hernandez, is going to be there. But you're going to hear a tidbit of what he's going to talk about then that you can't miss, because once you hear a little bit of what he has to say, I heard he gave me a minute and a half just now, and I'm going to make sure that I'm going to be at that symposium, okay? So right now, let me introduce to you guys without any kind of craziness other than what I already did the last minute, keeping you guys not talking or hearing Mr. Hernandez. This is Ray Hernandez. Ray, please say hello to the world.
Yes, this is Ray Hernandez. I'm one of the co-founders, together with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Dr. Rudy Shields, and Mary Rodwell, of the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Experiences, otherwise known as FREE.
And, you know, tell us a little bit about your background, because we got into a little bit about that a few minutes ago. Now, explain to everybody how you got involved with ufology and UFOs and aliens and alien abduction, because that's actually pretty intense in and of itself, especially that experience that you had back in 2012. You want to tell the viewers about that?
Surely. My academic background, I went to UC Berkeley for a PhD. Before that, I went to Cornell for a master's degree, Cornell University. And at Berkeley, I received the National Science Foundation PhD fellowship. And plus, I was an adjunct professor for 6 years, and I was the director of the City University of New York Environmental Research Institute for about 6 years as well. So I did come from an academic background, and over the last 18 years, I've been an attorney in Miami, Florida. And before March of 2012, I was a total atheist material rationalist with a scientific mind, and I had no interest in UFOs, the paranormal, non-human intelligence, none of these topics. Everyone that was interested in those things were all nut jobs, you know, from my perspective. And then
yep.
In March of 2012, my wife and I had an experience with a plasma beam in our own living room that took my wife right in front of me and our dog, who we were going to be euthanizing later that afternoon because she became totally paralyzed. And then this beam put me to sleep. And then when I woke up 45 minutes later, my wife was returned. And the dog was totally healed, medically healed from her total paralysis. And she wasn't even the old little lady walking around with arthritis. Now she's like a little teenager running around the house.
Wow.
And
wow.
My wife had 45 minutes of missing time. And then shortly after that, over the next 6 months, my wife began to see very up close UFOs. One time, it was like the Goodyear blimp she saw, you know, with lights running all around it. And
mm-hmm.
And then when she went to Mexico for about a month to stay with her family, she called on a craft, and that craft managed to delay airport traffic in Veracruz Airport for an hour and a half because it was right above the airport. And it was
mm-hmm.
reported in the local newspaper, the TV stations. And then there was another sighting where she had called the craft down to appear at 9. But it came at 9:30 while they were driving to her other sister's house up in the hills. And all of the members in her car, family members, saw that craft come down close. They all saw it. beamed down a blue light in front of the lead car for about a minute, then descended, then it took off. My wife also saw three human-looking beings that were like 7 feet tall, dressed in white monk's robes, that floated right in front of her for about 45 seconds. So, and then in September, early September of 2012, I playfully called down a craft, and 15 minutes later, this football stadium-sized craft appeared right on top of my next-door neighbor's house. It was 30 feet away from me. Total, telepathic communication took place. My daughter got to see it. Three other friends got to see it. It was just a mind-blowing experience.
Wow.
So that was just at the beginning of all of these cases of experiences of high strangeness. And there was a time period, the intense part was about 2 years. And then there was a point there that, I began to drink because it got more and more and more intense. It, without a body experiences, downloads and things of that sort. And,
right.
And for the first year, I had no one to talk to. So, thank God that my wife had these experiences, that my daughter had these experiences, because if I would have had them by myself, I would have thought that I was, crazy, mentally unstable.
Right, and why wouldn't
you?
That's completely normal if you have these by yourself, right? You'd think no one else is there to
have
around.
Yeah. And I've spoken over the last couple of years, many people that have had these experiences by themselves. And then they go and they tell their wife, or their husband, and they think that they're crazy. They tell their friends think they're crazy. So.
Yeah, that does happen because, just like you said, prior to this incident, you looked at people who might be, interested in it or studying it and went, you guys are kooks, you're crazy for that. And, I still have to this day. to this day, I have family members who laugh at me because of that. And I have family members who won't follow my page and have, stopped following me so they won't get the post because you post that crazy alien stuff. So I get you, brother. Right?
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. So since then, you guys started this foundation,
everybody.
Right?
Well, what happened was that like anyone else that has these experiences for the first time, you go to the internet,
right.
And you try to investigate things for the first time. I knew it was UFO related after about 3 months after that initial experience. Initially, I thought it was paranormal related, because it wasn't outside. I didn't see a craft outside. It was all inside the house. Stuff. I thought it was paranormal,
Right.
But then it was about 2.5 months later, my wife saw this big, gigantic UFO right outside the house. And then I knew it was UFO related. But for my wife, it's all angelic, because our dog became paralyzed the night before. And so we called our vet, a good friend of ours, Dr. Phil Cruz, and we told him, what has happened to the dog. And he says, look, Ray, I'll open up the office tomorrow to euthanize her because the dog had a very bad case of arthritis. She couldn't run. She couldn't jump. She was taking Viagra for her heart and diuretics to flush out the excess liquid from her kidney. So she was very, very sick. And so my wife then began praying all night. She was born in Mexico, hardcore Catholic. And that's what, in that culture they do. They pray, for miraculous interventions.
Right.
So when that energy being appeared in our living room, to her, it was an angel,
Right, right.
And so, it really was an angel. I don't know how else you can describe it, She was praying
all night
for an angel. In the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, the angel appeared, she just doesn't realize that she had 45 minutes of missing time, and then in terms of the UFO stuff, she's
right,
sort
exactly.
of like, it beats around the UFO stuff, it's like the angels are coming in a van, UFO van, so.
Right,
but,
exactly.
But it's her experience, it's her way of coping with it,
Right, and that's kind of what
issue,
happens.
How do you
think,
cope with these things?
Yeah, I think that's what happens, but I think you're more the expert on that than I am. We're mentally, we if we have that missing time, we try to I think we try to put it in, you know, block it out so that we don't know, you know what I mean? I don't know, but maybe you would know better because you've asked these questions. So I want to get into that as we go along too. Because you know, of it, now since then, have you talked to your wife more about that and had her to understand what's going on, or have you just kind of left her with that missing time and not knowing?
With my wife, you know, everything reverts back, to God and to angels. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
She now, you know, is not as quote unquote Catholic as she was before, because before we had to go to Thursday group prayer meetings. We had to go to church every Sunday. You know, if you didn't, you know, the blasphemy, you know. And so now it's like, you know, once a month, once every 2 months, you know. But she still, you know, interprets everything through the lens of Christianity and angelic encounters, which is, you know, a reasonable approach to take it, given her, you know, her personal experience. But getting back to that original question that you had asked,
mm-hmm.
when I had this experience and then how it continued with my wife,
mm-hmm.
All I did was just, you know, order UFO books and on the internet the whole time watching videos. And what had happened was that that what I was reading did not coincide with what was happening to us, to my wife and I. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very different experiences. And then there was a time period, like about 9 months later, that I then began to do what is called an academic literature review. That means what has been written academically about this topic. Okay. And what I gathered was that almost nothing has been written academically about this. There were a few very small surveys that were done, and I could, you know, quote you all the authors and, you know, the writings. But they mainly involved 50 people, involved 50 questions. And again, the topic areas were very, very limited. For example, Dr. Leo Sprinkle did two statistical studies on experiencers, mainly abductees. And
mm-hmm.
One of them was a psychological study where he administered a mental health assessment to see whether, you know, abductees were crazy or not. And what he determined was that they were just as crazy as anyone else, you know. They were in the whole normalcy curve.
Yeah.
And then Kathleen Martin did a small study of just 50 individuals with 50 questions, again, mainly on abductees. Everyone always cites the work of David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins and even Dr. John Mack. You know, these
mm-hmm.
were not academic research studies.
Individuals
published were people that walked through their door, okay, knocked on the door, hey, can I be regressed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, you know, self-selected the people that they got to work with. And in many cases, they turned people away because they had positive experiences. And I've heard that from tons of people regarding
mm-hmm.
Jacobs and Hopkins. And
mm-hmm.
then, you know, leading questions, the major issue with hypnotic regressions. Dr.
Yeah.
Mack even said it himself. If this has to be done by a professional because of one of the problems is the leading question issue, okay? So here you have Hopkins and Jacobs who publicly proclaimed that they have never met one individual that had a positive experience, okay? Doing these hypnotic regressions, writing like a book a year, and going
mm-hmm.
on coast to coast 4 or 5 times a year, appearing in all the major UFO conferences. So, you know, those writings and also the horror books that initially Whitley Strieber wrote about set the whole genre for this field, okay?
Right.
But again, these were not academic research studies. So then what had happened was that for about a year and a half, I was having all of these crazy experiences one after another, which I won't go into all the details, okay? Because it
mm-hmm.
would just take several days to do that. But what had happened was that in May of 2013, I was driving my car to go to downtown Miami, and then all of a sudden I wasn't in my car anymore. I was just pure consciousness floating in what I now call like a matrix reality. Okay, and there I then all of a sudden a wheel appeared in. I was inside this huge, gigantic spinning wheel. The wheel then developed spokes, like different divisions in the wheel, like a cart. Okay. But I was
mm-hmm.
inside. Then in each side of the different spokes, what I saw is what I now call the contact modalities. Those are all the different ways that humans are piercing the veil and having contact with non-human intelligence. For example, UFO-related contact, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, remote viewing, channeling, hallucinogenic, shamanic journeys, okay, communication with ghosts, you know, spirits, et cetera, et cetera. All the different ways that humans are piercing the veil and having contact with non-human intelligence, okay? And then I visually saw these things. It was like a vision was put in my head, you know, of what these things were. You know, you really cannot describe these things.
Right.
It's like this instant download of what you're looking at. You know what it is instantaneously. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't a voice. It was straight information, okay, that came to me. And the information was that humans are studying all these different ways that they're communicating with us, okay? But they're viewing it as separate and distinct components. But in fact, it's all one phenomenon. And the key to understanding all of this is consciousness, which is the very fabric of your reality.
Right.
Okay? And then it said, you need to inform humanity of the relationship between us, the spirit world. You're going to need help. There's two criteria for that help. It's not about making money, and the individuals that are going to be helping you have to have minimal ego. And then, poof, I was in my car.
Minimal ego. I want to stop you there real quick. I want everybody to understand that. Minimal ego. Do you understand what he just said? Now, the reason I say that is because we here at Portal to Ascension and my guys at Ancient Aliens Worldwide and Orion Rising Worldwide, that's what we talk about is the only way this works is you got to check your ego at the door. So I'm sorry, sir, for interrupting, but I wanted you to see.
I want them to see
that you, as a doctor, as an academic, are also saying, throw out that ego. You can't have ego. I'm sorry for interrupting. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, it wasn't me. It was that information that was put in my consciousness, you know?
Okay.
And
even
then,
better, right?
All of
even
a sudden,
even
I'm,
more
I'm
grander.
Back in
Go
the
ahead.
Car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of a sudden, I'm back in the car at 8:30 in the morning in the middle of a traffic jam listening to the same radio interview on public radio station of this artist that he had liposuction taking his fat out. And he was doing some carvings, some soap carvings from his fat, okay?
Oh, Lord.
It didn't even skip a beat. It's like no time was gone, okay? And then my head was like another atom bomb exploded in my head. Like, you know, what more are they going to do to me? You know, give me, you know, with these types of crazy experiences, right? So that's not even the interesting part, what I just told you. The interesting part is what developed over the next 3 days. Mary Rodwell, okay, is one of the world's leading researchers of individuals that have had abductions and UFO-related contact experiences. People don't know her in the U.S. because she's based out of Australia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But she's extremely well-known throughout the rest of the world, okay? She has worked with more than 3,000 individuals, not like David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins to extract information, okay? She's worked with them as a therapist. That's what they go for her for. Like, Mary,
right.
I can't deal with this stuff. Can you help me? Okay? So that's how she works with these individuals, more than 3,000 over 35 years. Okay? So what had happened was in October of 2012, I had sent an email to like 10 well-known names in this field, hoping to talk to someone because I wasn't able to talk to anybody. You know, so I sent it to like, you know, Whitley Strieber, you know, Grant Cameron, Stan Friedman, you know, Mary Rodwell, you know, all these names that are out there just, you know, throwing out a line, like help, you know, when I talk to someone, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Only two people communicated back with me, and again, it was like little short paragraphs, you know, like hang in there, buddy, you know, that type of stuff. And then what happened was that Mary sent me an email that when I got back home that same day from this experience, and it says, "Dear Ray, I'm sorry I'm responding to an email that you sent me 6 months ago, but it just popped up on my screen today."
Wow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then I sent her an email back. I said, "Well, this is what happened over the last 6 months." And I went through all the details.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what happened today. Okay. So she was like, "Holy cow, you know, I need to talk to you, you know." And so then she showed me how to use Skype. I didn't even know how to use Skype, you know, beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So I then communicated with her in Skype in Australia. It was early in the morning for her, you know, late at night for me. And I stayed till like, you know, 1 or 1:30 in the morning. And I told her, look, Barry, I got to go, you know, I got to, you know, work the next day. And then the next day at 9:30 in the morning, I get a telephone call. Okay. Hello, is this Ray Hernandez? Mind you, this is at 9:30 in the morning. Yes, who's this? Oh, this is Dr. Rudy Shield. I go, who?
Who?
Dr. Rudy Shield is one of the world's most well-known astrophysicists, expert in black holes.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago, he wrote a series of academic papers saying that Stephen Hawking was totally wrong on black holes. Okay. 4 years ago, Hawking wrote a paper admitting he was wrong over
mm-hmm.
the last 30 years on black holes. Okay.
Yep.
Rudy's version now is the accepted version. Okay. One of the accepted versions. Okay.
Yeah.
In terms of his paper. But no one, you know, publicly acknowledges him. Okay. Because he's a quacky professor. Okay. Just to let you know
right.
the brilliance of this man. Okay. He was calling me. He's now 75 years old. He's an emeritus professor of astrophysics at Harvard University. So he was calling me, okay, and then he introduced himself, and he said, you know, can we talk? And I said, well, of course. And then he told me was that Mary Rodwell, she sends him information of experiencers that get downloads of consciousness and downloads of quantum physics, okay, because part of the information was given to me dealt with, you know, consciousness and the physics of our reality, okay. So then he asked me to explain to him what had happened. Okay, so I told him all the details. And he says, Ray, a theory that he and Dr. Edgar Mitchell and a team of 20 PhD physicists from all around the world have been working on over the last 20 years called the quantum hologram theory of consciousness explains that all of what I now call the contact modalities, that they're all one phenomenon. That they're
mm-hmm.
not separate. So what these entities, okay, this non-human intelligence told you is correct according to this theory. Okay? And then he goes on and begins to explain in layman's terms what the quantum hologram theory of consciousness is. Okay? And like half of it I understood. The other half like went over my head, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then he then says, look, Ray, you know, they gave you a mission to do. I'm here to help. Okay. Then he explained his work with Dr. John Mack in terms of teaching Dr. John Mack about consciousness. He was the first one because Dr. Mack went to him. He says, Rudy, I'm getting all these people that state that they're being taken to other realities, okay, other dimensions. You know, I mean, is this true? Is there such a thing as other dimensions, other realities? And, you know, they're talking about their consciousness was out of body, that they were in other planes and things like that. I mean, what the hell's going on, right? So then Rudy told him basically that, this was more than 20 years ago, that the field of physics is slowly incorporating the multiverse theory, okay? The theory
uh-huh.
that there might be more than one universe, okay? More than one dimension, okay? And now Rudy told me that if you graduate with a PhD in physics, you're going to be an adherent to a multiverse theory, okay? Most probably string theory, okay? But there are other competing theories that are out there. But almost everybody is an adherent to a multiverse theory, okay? But he was the one that told Dr. John Mack, you know, that what these people are experiencing is, you know, that can be explained through a multiverse theory, okay? So then he was, said, Ray, write down this telephone number. And I wrote it down. And he said, that's the telephone number of his mentor. So I said to myself, who in the hell could be this guy's mentor? He's like an astrophysicist from Harvard and stuff, right? So I said, well, who's your mentor? Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I was like, holy shit, you know?
Right.
And then he says, give him a call. He only lives 90 minutes away from you. You know, as a matter of fact, I'm going to give him a call and let him know of our discussion, right? So I was scared straight to give him a call, you know? So I called him like 4 hours later, okay? So here I was the very next day on the phone call with Edgar Mitchell, okay? He then invited me to his house the very next day. Okay?
That's crazy.
He used to live in Lakewood, 90 minutes away. So here I was at 10 a.m. knocking on Edgar's door, you know. That's the time he told me to get there. And then I stayed there like 6 hours. In those 6 hours, I learned about his entire life, what all the astronauts had in space, the cosmonauts, his own, you know, out-of-body experience in space where he was downloaded, you know, with all knowledge of the universe, you know,
right,
which he rarely talked about. The work on the Disclosure Project, his work on consciousness, the creation of the Institute for Noetic Sciences. He was at Roswell when that, you know, that crash occurred. You know, he was a senior there in high school. How he was in Chuck Yeager's group, and that many of the pilots from that group were selected for flight training with, I think it was initially was Gemini and then later Apollo. He just went on and on and on and on, you know.
Right.
Later on, he begins to explain. I told him my experience, my story, what happened, you know, from the beginning, you know, in March of 2012 to that experience that occurred a couple of days ago. He then told me the same thing that Rudy told me about the quantum hologram theory of consciousness, that can explain what these entities told me. Okay. He said, and I'm quoting him, he said, "Ray, you need to listen to your ETs. Okay, they gave you a mandate. Okay, and anyone knows Edgar Mitchell knows that he was a very close friend of hundreds of experiencers over the years. That's the side of Edgar that no one knew. He worked more closely with experiencers than with all these ufologists. He said ufology is a piece of junk. He said that they're dinosaurs. Okay, they will never understand. It's not about nuts and bolts." Okay, it's important that the information be released, you know.
Absolutely, right.
That these crafts are real, you know, that people are having these experiences, you know, the pilots are seeing. That's very, very important. But in terms of methodology of how we research this phenomenon, he said the nuts and bolts is a dead paradigm. Okay, they're dinosaurs and they're extinct and they don't even know it. Okay, so mm-hmm. What had happened was that he then told me that he and Rudy had already discussed, you know, what had happened to me, you know, before I had called them up that day, you know. Then they agreed to help me out and to be my scientific advisors for wherever I wanted to do. And I told them I had no idea. Okay. So we left it at that, you know. He says, "Don't worry, Ray. It'll come to you. You'll figure it out." Because I told them I have no idea what the hell I'm going to be doing. You know, what they told me, right. I didn't even understand it, you know.
Right.
And so then I called Mary via Skype, and we had a Skype conversation. I told her what happened over the last 2 days, you know. And I told her it's just story of my life over the last 18 months, you know. It's just these types of experiences. It's just crazy. And then I said, "Would you like to join us?" Okay. And she said, "Yes." Okay. But we had no idea what the hell we're going to be doing. Okay. Mary then a week later calls me, "Ray, I've got the name. Free." Okay. And she gave me the acronym for it. And then several weeks later, I woke up on a Saturday. No one was in the house, and I already had I already woke up with all the information of what we're going to be doing. So I wrote up like a preliminary outline of a research methodology, which is to undertake the world's first ever comprehensive academic research study of individuals that have had UFO-related contact experiences. Okay. Within a couple of days, I was on the phone call with Dr. John Klimo, one of the world's leading academics on the paranormal, okay, who taught for 40 years as a professor of psychology. 75 of his 300 dissertations were on topics of the paranormal. Mm-hmm. He then was like, "Oh, my God, Ray, I would love to join you guys." And I said, "Not only can you join us, you can be the chair of our research study." Okay. He then told me that he taught research methodology for 40 years. Okay. And at the different universities he's taught. In time, we got numerous other academics. We got Leo Sprinkle, okay, who was the first academic to write an academic article on abductees. And his interest in this topic began in 1962, he told me. Then we got
Dr. Everybody's had to hide their interest in this, because most of the academic world wouldn't speak of it and would out you, basically, and like you were a lunatic and crazy if you talked about it, right?
Correct, correct. That's the issue that we've got now, because we've got about 7 PhDs total. One is Dr. Bob Davis, a retired professor of neuroscience at the State University of New York. Claude Swanson, who received his PhD in physics, you know, from Princeton University. Dr. Russell Scalpone, who received his PhD in psychology as a statistician, and he was teaching at Northwestern University. And then we had Dr. Rudy Shields, and we had academic on board. My Alzheimer's is kicking in.
That's okay. That's a lot to remember anyways, right?
Yeah. What happened is that we have like about 5 people that are still academics, but they don't want to be publicly associated with us. Okay.
Right. Because it's still kind of that way, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, that they'll be labeled a crazy person, you know? And so what we then, over a 9-month period together with 15 other advisors, these are, you know, researchers in this field, mainly abductee researchers. We then developed a methodology. Let's ask numerous questions. And what we developed was almost 600 quantitative questions, yes or no for 1 to 5, things of that sort. And then we asked 70 qualitative questions. These are open-ended questions where people got to write out the details of these 70 questions. We're now in the 4th year of this academic research study that we're doing it in multiple languages. The main languages are English. Now we have 4,010 individuals that have taken our surveys from over 100 countries. Let me repeat that. Over 4,000 individuals from over 100 countries. And this is just in the English language. In Spanish, we have approximately 800 individuals that have taken our survey in Spanish. And much of our research findings totally contradict what is circulating in the field of ufology.
Right. And see, and now you guys are asking questions, and I want to make sure to point this out. Unlike, like you said, Hopkins and those guys, where they were asking pointed questions, you guys are not asking pointed questions at all, correct? You're just asking them blunt questions about their experience, right?
We're asking questions, specific questions, and we're also asking them to write out the details of their experiences. But what makes us different of categories that we ask questions in, for example, Mary Rodwell, Kathy Martin, okay, Denise Stoner, Leo Sprinkle, Barbara Lamb, Michael Melton, who has a radio show, Starborn Support, Reverend Michael Carter. I could go on and on and on. And then we had many experiencers that were helping us to prepare questions. These people were telling us that abductions were a related type of issues were a small fraction of the experiences that these people were having. Like, for example, in my case, okay, I've never been abducted, okay? My wife doesn't even remember being abducted. I know because she just disappeared right in front of me, okay? But yet, when I go on radio shows, everyone always refers to this as abduction research. I put them out real quickly. I said, look, I'm not conducting abduction research. This is not about only abductions. Abductions, what we learned later on, is experienced by only 1/4 of the individuals.
Right.
Okay. The people that have had direct physical contact with non-human intelligence, okay, only 2/3 of those people have never had an abduction. Only 1/3 of the people that have had direct physical contact have had an abduction.
Right.
Even then, for the people that state that they've had an abduction, what we learned was that 60% of these people, over time, call themselves contactees.
Right.
And I can
now we got a caller. I'm not sure who we got a caller that's calling in. Let's see if you want to take a question from the caller.
Yeah.
All right, hold on. Let's get this. Yeah. Let me see if I can answer this here and figure this out. Hello, caller. How are we doing? Who is this on the line? Are you there? Okay, there was somebody there, but now there's nobody on the line. Okay, it looks like the, somebody tried to call in.
Yeah,
go ahead.
They could call back.
Yeah, yeah. If you guys, whoever this is calling, we can't hear you. So if you are still hearing us, I'm going to hang up, and then you go ahead and call back, and we'll see if we can get you on, okay?
Okay. We ask questions in numerous types of categories, okay? We
uh-huh.
ask demographic information, you know, age, gender, occupation, you know, state, country, race, ethnicity, whatever. Our surveys, just to let everyone know, were completely anonymous, okay? Completely anonymous. We had no idea who you were, your address, date of birth, and all that stuff. The only thing we had was the email. And you could have put in an email, you know, crazyjoe45, you know, at gmail.com. We wouldn't know who these people are, okay?
Right.
So we asked demographics. We had telepathic contact. We
mm-hmm.
had physical contact on Earth, physical contact on a craft, physical contact in another type of 3D reality, like on another planet, underground, another physical reality. We had contact in a matrix reality, in a non-3D reality. We had
mm-hmm.
psychic and parapsychological contact experiences. We had the nature of the non-human intelligence, the nature of the being. Information received. What did they tell you? The actual physical aspects of the contact experiences, childhood aspects of the contact experiences, physical change inventory, how you changed, behavioral life inventory, how your life totally transformed out of all of these, okay? We asked your opinions on religious, spiritual issues, opinions overall, and then your summary of your beliefs of the contact experiences. So this is a huge arena that none of these so-called abduction research touch with a 10-foot pole, okay?
Right.
And what we got
– all right, looks like our caller's back. Let me see. Nope, they hung up again.
Okay.
I guess they're having problems because they went 24 seconds and hung up. So I think they're trying to call in, but for some reason they keep losing connection. So so keep trying, caller.
Okay.
I saw you on there, but I couldn't click on you before you hung up. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, there's three major findings, okay? The first major finding is that UFO-related contact experience with non-human intelligence
mm-hmm.
was overwhelmingly a positive experience, okay? And I could go over some of the data. For example, let's go with the data with the different types of beings, okay? The number one type of being was an energy being. That's at 56%, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The percent that viewed it as negative was only 7%, okay? The number two category was human-looking being.
Mm-hmm.
That's 51%. Negative was 5%, mainly negative, okay? The short grays were 50%,
mm-hmm.
but 11% saw them as negative. The spirit and ghost forms, 46%, okay? 7% said it was a negative experience. The tall grays, 33% of the people saw tall grays. And again, we're talking, you know, a huge number. For example, for the tall grays, that was 549 people, okay?
Right.
For the energy being 938, for the human looking, 836, for the short grays, 844. So we're not talking about one or two little short grays here. We're talking about almost 844, okay? And
wow.
11% of the people are saying that it was a negative experience. Okay, even the evil dreaded reptilians, okay, 432
mm-hmm.
people or 26% had encounters with reptilians. Out of those, 23% said it was mainly negative, okay? In the phase three, when we asked them to write out the details, we learned that the reason why they chose mainly negative was because of its physical appearance, not because of what it did, okay? Here you have this 8-foot tall crocodile that weighs like 300 or 400 pounds standing right in front of you in some type of military outfit, you know, and people are going to
yeah,
be, you know, defecating
kind of
in their
out,
pants.
Right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's,
you know,
that's,
I heard a story. I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard a story about, the government was hiring security guards in one of their bases. And the guy, they didn't tell him anything. They didn't vet him in on what's going on. So he was sitting there. And around the corner comes a praying mantis the size of a 7-foot tall praying mantis. And the guy had a heart attack and died. So they decided they needed to start telling the security, you're going to see aliens like reptilians and things like that down here. So I don't know if that's true or if that's just something somebody made up. But I've heard the story kicked around the internet.
Well, just like the story of the Rh negative blood is kicking around all the internet, right? Well, we asked that question. Over 1,000, goodness, how many people? More than 1,800 people answered that question. And guess what? It's only 14%, the national average.
Yeah, okay? It's actually, yeah. Yeah, it's actually low.
That. Okay.
I actually have the I'm typo negative and have the Rh negative factor, but it's a low percentage of the people. There's a difference. It doesn't have anything to do with the UFO or alien contact. However, there is a statistic that we haven't really gone after 100%, but there is a statistic that the people with that, with the typo or the Rh negative factor, have a higher tendency to have ESP. Than other people, but that's not proven 100% clinically yet. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, correct, yeah. So anyway, most of these experiences with these different types of beings are actually neutral, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The only differences were the human-looking being, because that was 60% positive. The energy being was 48. The short grays was 29. The ghost, 46. The tall grays, 32% positive. The reptilian was even 16% positive. The praying mantis types was 29% positive. But the vast majority of these experiences were neutral experiences. That's stuff that you don't read on the internet, okay?
Now let me get your opinion on this, because you're talking about that. There's been rumor, false flag rumors, like Dr. Stephen Greer and a few others, that are saying that there's an agenda, and that there has been an agenda to paint all of this in a negative light, to only show the negative and not show the positive, because the powers that be, quote unquote, are concerned that if you, me, and all of us in the world know that it's commonplace that aliens really are out there and they really do exist, that, and some of them are coming from other dimensions, not just other places in this universe, that we're not going to listen to our leaders anymore as much, because why would we listen to you guys when you're not really in charge? And what's your opinion on that? Do you agree with that, or does that just...
You know, I don't deal with the positive, the politics of it, okay? I just deal with the data. I just deal with the facts.
I like
what,
that.
What 4,000 experiences are telling us, okay?
And
you can make up your own conclusion. For example, we asked experiencers this question. If you could stop your ET contact experiences, would you? Okay? Now, given what's circulating out there in the media, you would think almost everybody would want them to stop, right?
Yeah.
Okay?
But it was the opposite, right?
The opposite. 84% said, "Don't stop it, keep it coming, baby."
Right.
84%.
And see, I would also. I'd be one of those people that would say the same thing. I would say absolutely to keep it coming, and not stop it, because you know, you have to know. I want to know. Don't you want to know? Of course you do, because that's why you're looking into this.
Well,
you're doing the study because you want to know the truth, right?
Most people are not having negative experiences. Okay.
Right?
They're not having negative experiences. That's just a stereotype, okay? There
right,
is a percent
right.
that are perceiving these things as negative. And I could go into
right.
that later on in a couple of seconds. But,
mm-hmm.
for example, we asked this question, do you believe ETs are bad, malevolent, evil? Only 9% said yes, okay? We
right.
asked experiences, how would you – yeah, we asked this question in numerous ways, okay? How would you describe your experiences? 5% said it was mainly negative, okay? 66% was mainly positive. Neutral was the rest. Okay.
See, and I think I think it's important to reiterate what you're saying, that most of the ones that were negative were because of, say, looks. They were kind of afraid of, like, the giant reptilian, like you said, a big reptilian.
Well, no, there's more than that.
Tall,
There's more to that. What we discovered for the it depends on what questions we asked, okay?
Right.
Because of the negative was anywhere – the questions that we asked from 5% all the way up to 15%, depending on the type of question, okay? For those individuals, okay, one issue is the looks, okay? That just scared the hell out of these people, okay? There's also hundreds of people that have woken up I got the exact number here somewhere, but it's not a ton of folks, you know? But under 400 people that woke up on a tablet or table being examined, okay?
Right, right.
Most of the time with a short gray, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then most of the people, they get snippets, they get recollections, okay, of that experience. They don't get, like, they're out there 2 hours awake, you know, having these experiences, okay?
Right, most it's like being roofied. You're kind of in and out. You remember a bit here and a bit there and a bit here,
yes,
right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, correct. And so those people are very – the ones that only had one or two of these types of experiences, those are very negative experiences for these people. But for the vast majority that have had contact experiences, okay, this, you don't have one or two or three. The vast majority, over 50% of them have had over 10, okay, contact experiences. What we found out is the more experiences you have, the more positive at the end you see your experiences, because they start off being examined on the table, okay, and they wind up getting a tour of the craft, you know, over several years later, or being taken to other realities, dimensional realities, given spiritual messages and things of that sort, okay? But many people start being examined on a slab, okay? It's people that did not progress to the next, you know, stage of interaction. Those are the most traumatized. Also, we've had about 120 people that claim to have had MILAB experiences, military abductions, okay? And those are the most traumatized. That was about approximately one-fourth of the abductees were in the MILAB folks, okay? So there's that negativity out there, okay? But you need to understand why, you know, these things are being negative, you know, perceived negative to people. And so and then that was the first finding, major finding. There's tons of findings here, but the overall – one was that this is primarily a positive experience, even with all the different beings that I told you about, okay? Secondly, this is primarily a paranormal experience, okay? You name the paranormal experience, experiencers are going through it, okay? For example, did you know that 80% of the people that took our survey have had out-of-body experiences?
Are you
surprised
really?
By that number?
Actually, yes. but it makes
number,
sense, but 80%. I am surprised that the number's so high. Yeah.
Well, the researchers in Free knew that a very large percent were having out-of-body experiences, but they just didn't know what was the percent because this study was never done before. Okay.
Right.
Now, once you've had an out-of-body experience and you see that you are not physical, okay, that you're actually spirit, okay, that changes you dramatically. Okay.
Right.
Totally changes you dramatically. Your outlook, your worldview. Okay. Another thing, we asked the question, have you ever had a near-death experience? And guess what? 37% have had near-death experiences.
We got a caller coming in.
Okay.
Let me see here. Yeah, let me see if I can bring this one on. All right. Hello, caller. Are you
there? Hi
there.
Yes.
Hi, how are you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
I'm good. Yes. I'm very excited to listen to this program, and I have a question for Ray, and I've heard about Ray for a while. The website has really come a long way, and there's so much interesting information I'm going to look forward to looking at on the quantum hologram and the nature of consciousness.
Now, Ray, can you hear the caller?
So my question for Ray.
Yes, I can hear the caller, yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Go ahead, caller.
Hello, Ray. My question for Ray is, what about the familial aspect? I haven't heard you address that. I've had experiences. My son has had experiences. I think my daughter has had some that she doesn't remember, and I think my granddaughter has had some. She's six. So can you tell me a little bit about what your studies?
Yeah, the issue is that we've had close to with the all of our questions, we've had almost 700 questions, so I can't go through everything. But, yes, we did ask questions about family relationships, and we did find that I would have to look up the data that if you don't mind, I could look for it now, the data on the family relationship. But, yes, the most common is the spouse that has had contact experience. Children, okay, and also the parents and the siblings.
Okay.
Yeah, so it seems like they stay within a family line, yeah?
Well, that's an issue because I think that these types of contact experiences are happening but no one is talking about it. For example, I told you that right above my house, there was a we saw that big, gigantic UFO, right? Well, next to that house, this lady and her two children and her father have been aboard a UFO craft. They've had over 20 years contact experiences, okay? And the husband, who's an attorney, admitted that to me. So, you know, yes, these are experiences are happening, but what happened is most of the people that I talk to, the vast majority, they don't talk to anyone else. They just keep it to themselves. So I think
that's
much,
I think
much
well,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
let me look
family,
at the data
for
I'm sorry?
Okay. I think in my family, my siblings and my mother would probably not want to approach the idea. It would be they would be resistant to it because of their religious kind of parameters. And so, you know, even if they had had something, they would resist that idea. But my older brother had one. But, you know, certainly my family members, my children and maybe my granddaughter even have had such experiences.
I think you're right. I think people just don't talk about it. Yeah. I think people are just afraid of it, like you said, for religious beliefs and stuff like that. A lot of times they don't want to be ridiculed by their friends or other family members or their religion, you know, saying about that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Challenge their belief system. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got 8 minutes left. Thank you, caller. I hope that answered your question. Did it answer your question?
He's looking up the research right now, so that would be great.
We'll wait for him. He is looking that up. So I agree with what he was saying, and he'll probably have a statistic for you, because I found that in my family, you know, we've had some incidences. I'm also an experiencer of different things that have happened to my brother and myself, and we believe that my father, because my father had talked to us about missing time when we were younger. My father has been passed since 1986, but he talked about that having missing time there, so not knowing what that was at the time. Learning about it afterwards turned out that I saw the same thing in our family, but a lot of the family members won't admit that there's something otherwise. But, you know, if my father and my brother and I, chances are my sisters, you know, maybe my mother, probably grandparents, you know what I mean, just like you, but they're very Catholic, like Ray's wife, so they don't want to talk about that stuff.
Right.
So, Ray, are you still with us, or did you run off to get the information? I think Ray's looking up the information on another computer or something. So
yeah.
There's Ray.
We really
go ahead,
have
Ray.
A lot of time to talk about.
We got like 7 minutes
left. Findings,
right.
But while I look up for this this topic, if you could hold on the line, I just want to let all the audience members know that we're in the process of completing a 600-page book, which discusses the research findings from our 4-year research study. And we're going to be talking about numerous topic areas of our research finding. Here's the data. Has anyone else in your family had contact with a non-human intelligent being? Okay. 48.4%, almost one out of every two people. That's 1,057 people that responded to this. So 50% said, yes, someone in my family had contact with, you know, non-human intelligence. And then in terms of the different family members, grandparents, 18.4%, father, 25.4%, mother, 40%, aunts and uncles, 12.2%, brothers and sisters, almost 41%, your children, 41%, your grandchildren, 5.5%. So as you can see, those are the actual numbers of all the people that they have
Right? If you look at that, do you think maybe it's a generational thing? If you look, as you see, as you go backwards in time to the parents and the grandparents, how the number sort of goes diminishes a bit. And do you think that has to do with religious beliefs where they don't? Because back then, you know, the further back in time you go, if you go to the 70s,
yeah,
you were a crackpot if you believed in UFOs,
right? You have
right?
a tendency to talk to your husband and wife about this, okay?
More.
And then if your children are, you know, adults, you know, you have a tendency to talk to your children about this as well. And then, so the further the relationship is, the further the number, the smaller the number. Like like a grandparent, you know, how many people's grandparents are alive, you know?
True.
When a lot of these experiences start, when they're able to talk about it. And even your grandchildren. So, but when you look at your children is 41%, brothers and sisters is 40.5%. Your mother is 30%. Father is 25%, maybe because a lot of people just don't have good communications with their fathers, you know.
right.
You know, so
can
kids
I ask
can't
one
go
other
by
question?
These numbers and just make these assumptions. You know, there's other parameters to it. But but I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I have one other, if I can ask it really quickly.
Sure.
Does your
yeah.
research cover anything to do with geography? Because there's a specific place that I have had many experiences. And I'm wondering
we have people all over the world, more than 100 countries that have answered our surveys in English. Okay. Just before I leave, let folks know that in May, we're going to be publishing our book. It's titled Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence. And this is an academic research study that the various academic professors in Free and researchers in Free have been doing for the last 4 years. No one has ever done anything like this. The whole field is filled with trash. Finally, we're going to be bringing real data that's been scientifically collected to this field. So it's
yes, and also for those of you and for yourself, caller, for those of you who are out there listening to this, then in October, on October 5th, 6th, and 7th, when he comes back to speak then, when Ray's going to speak then, well, Portals of Ascension, we're putting on that Ascension Conference. You can go to ascensionconference.com. It's going to be in Irvine, California, October 5th, 6th, and 7th, 2018, at the Atrium Hotel. And we're going to get an update on all the information that we talked about today, all the stuff that they do from between now and then, and including this book that Ray's talking about that they're putting out. So if you missed out on anything that we have going on here, or you have more questions about what we have going on here, buy your tickets now, get your hotel room now to make sure that you're there so that you can hear Ray talk then, and you can find out more about what we just talked about for this last hour. So Ray, tell them where they can find you, because we've got 2 minutes left. Caller, thank you. And like I said, thank you for the questions.
And,
those were good questions. And
thank
take a
you
look
for
at,
all you're doing. Thank you for all you're doing.
You're welcome.
We
yeah,
all
right.
The
organizational email is info@experiencer.org. That's info@experiencer.org. We have a website. It's experiencer.org. Nice and easy, experiencer.org. And we have a site on Facebook, and that's just it's not the academic side of Free. That's just the site for experiencers to communicate and dialogue with each other. The title of that is the Contact Modalities. Contact Modalities. But the academic website is experiencer.org. And there we have a summary of some of our data on the website. We have one of our articles that was already published in an academic journal, in the Journal of Consciousness, on there. And we have another article which is going to be published in the Journal of Scientific Exploration. And that is a peer-reviewed academic journal. And after it gets published in the Journal for the Society of Scientific Exploration, we will have that article there on that site as well. We have many, many articles on consciousness, on the contact modalities, for you to be able to make the link between the contact modalities, consciousness, and contact with non-human intelligence.
Outstanding. All right. This has been Portal to Ascension Blog Talk Radio. You can find us at portaltoascension.org. You can also go to ascensionconference.com and find out about our Ascension Conference coming up in October of 2018, October 5th, 6th, and 7th. I am your host, Leonard O'Neill. I also have my own show, which is called Orion Rising. You can find that show on my YouTube page. You can go there and look up Orion Rising, as well as go to YouTube and look up Portal to Ascension to find all of our other posts and our archive shows that we do all around the world. Go to those different places. You can also find my Ancient Aliens group at Orion Rising Worldwide on Facebook and Ancient Aliens Worldwide on Facebook, both groups. Take a look at that. You can find my book, Orion Rising, online everywhere. It's on sale. It's called Orion Rising. After the show, same thing. It's been a great show. And I'm glad that thank you guys for the listeners. Thank you for the callers. Thank you for the one who actually got through and the ones who tried. Next time, give it a shot and try. Thank you. This is Portal to Ascension. And.